Today's daf is Bava Basra daf Chaf Gimel. We left off in daf Chaf Beis Amud Beis. We are holding at the Mishnah at the bottom of daf Chaf Beis Amud Beis. So the Mishnah tells us a halacha that we, or at least the second half tells us a halacha we have just recently quoted. But says the Mishnah, Marchikines Asula Min Ashovach Arba Amos Kadesh Lo Tikvo Tanemiya. A person has to keep his ladder 4 amos away from somebody else's shovach, lest a little creature have the ability to use the ladder as to catapult himself into the shovach and hurt all the birds. So you have to keep the ladder away so that you don't provide access to animals that are going to be able to hurt the birds in the shovach, in the dovecote. Vesakosel min ha-maschila dalet amos. Person has to keep a wall that he builds 4 amos away from the maschila. This is what we just quoted yesterday, from the gutters that pour out the water, the rainwater that comes down on the roof. You have to keep it 4 amos away. Kadeshe zokefes hasulam, so that the fellow who owns the gutters should have the ability to lean his ladder against the gutters and be able to get a proper angle so that he's able to climb up. If you put a wall too close to the gutters, he'll never be able to properly align a ladder and be able to climb up. So you have to leave him 4 amos in order to leave a ladder. Who says that you owe him the ability to leave a ladder, to be able to put a ladder up there? So it also says, it must be that you've given him the right to do zekifas hasulam in your chatzer. Meaning, this is a person that you've sold that house that has the maschila on it. You've sold it to this guy, and you've told him as part of the sale that he's always going to have the right to do zekifas hasulam, to arrange a ladder so that he'll be able to clean out his gutters, even though the ladder is going to be in your chatzer. So, how much space do you have to leave him in order to live up to your end of the bargain of leaving him enough space to set up the ladder? So that's the chiddush of the Mishnah, that it's 4 amos. 4 amos is the assumed amount of space that's going to be necessary in order to angle the ladder properly. That's the whole chiddush. But if you never gave him rishus to use your chatzah for zekifas hasulam, so there's no automatic zekifas hasulam rights that he has just because he happens to own a gutter. It doesn't work that way. He would need to acquire the rights from you in your chatzah. Anyway, says the Mishnah, says the Gemara, Lema masnisa in delok Rabbi Yossi. Our Mishnah seems to be against Rabbi Yossi. Why is our Mishnah against Rabbi Yossi? Di Rabbi Yossi, hamar zechof for b'toch shalov, zeh b'toch shalov. Rabbi Yossi's general shita when it comes to archakos nezikin is that each person, as long as they're doing within their own property, can do whatever they want in their own property. You can't stop me from building something that I want to build as long as I'm doing it in my own property. So just because you have a maschila that's within 4 amos, so you have something, a shovach within range, doesn't mean that I'm not allowed to do what I want in my property. If you don't want to get hurt, so don't have a maschila or don't have a shovach within range of my property. So that's the sheet of Rabbi Yossi, which is very much against our Mishnah, where apparently even when working b'toch shalo, you have to go ahead and be marchik. Now Rashi points out over here that obviously Rabbi Yossi seems to be against our Mishnah, but not only against our Mishnah, the whole concept of Archakos Nezikin, the whole idea of Al Hamazik LaHarchik Azatzmo, Rabbi Yossi is against. He says, so Rashi points out, V'tuva mili ika b'masnisin devad elav Rabbi Yossi. There are lots of things in our Mishnayos that are against Rabbi Yossi. Elolema afzu desulam v'shovach delok Rabbi Yossi. Meaning, it's not such a gewaltig chiddush to find the Mishnah that's against Rabbi Yossi. The point is that the Gemara means to say is this Mishnah goes on the list. Meaning, shall we say that we should add our Mishnah to the list of Mishnayos that are against Rabbi Yossi? So says Gemara, no, afilu teim Rabbi Yossi. Our Mishnah might even be going like Rabbi Yossi. Ham Ravashi ki avin and beirav kahana have a amar modi Rabbi Yossi begirei didei. Rabbi Yossi is modi that when you do the damage directly, when it's as Rashi. She says, "Chitzim haba'im lo miyad gufo shel bal habayis mamish," where it literally comes directly from him. So then it's going to be a problem. Then even Rabbi Yossi is going to be moda that you can't do whatever you want in your own property if it's a girei didei case. If doing what you want means that you are directly hurting the other fellow, so hachli nami. So over here also, it's directly and immediately hurting the other fellow because zimn in the bahadi the manuklei yasu b'chor v'kafza. Sometimes as you put the ladder down near your friend's dovecote, there's a little creature waiting, a weasel waiting right there at the spot to be able to jump immediately. So it could be very often that it's immediate damage. And if it's immediate damage, then it's gire didei. Then it's going, even Rabbi Yossi would be mo that you're not allowed to cause such damage, even working completely within your own property. Frek the Gemara, it may be gire didei in the sense that it's immediate, but vahagramahu, isn't it at least indirect? And don't we assume that things that are indirect, that are only grama, are okay, that you're not going to be held responsible for grama? Some Rav Tzvi Bar Masna also merits grama b'nezik anaser. So Rav Tzvi Bar Masna says, no, even to do damage al yidei grama, even doing damage in an indirect way, is going to be aser. Meaning, even if you hold that we're not in dina de garmi, and you're pater milashalem, when it's dina de garmi, when you do something indirectly, you're not going to be held accountable in the sense that you won't have to pay for it, but still, says Rashi, aser ligrom, it's still aser to do so. And therefore, when you set up a situation where it's going to be grama, it's going to be mazik your friend in a grama kind of way, that's aser. We may not be a punishable offense, but it's certainly going to be aser. Now, Tosfos over here raises the issue of what the difference exactly is between grama and garmi. Right over here, we're assuming that, at least in the Havamina, that grama is not only pater, but grama b'nezikin is even mutter. Yet when it comes to garmi, there's a machlokas whether da'in dina de garmi or lo da'in dina de garmi. Are we mechayev a person when he damages in a garmi kind of way? Now both grama and garmi mean damaging indirectly. They both mean doing something indirectly. But what exactly is the defining line? Just how indirect does something have to be for it to become grama, and how indirect does something have to be for it to be garmi? So Tosfos tries to give examples throughout all of Shas. He takes us on a tour through Shas of where we have examples of grama and where we have examples of garmi. So he says, for instance, an example of grama, the Gemara says in Baba Kama, when you throw a kli from the top of a roof, and there were cushions at the bottom where it was supposed to land to catch it so that it wouldn't break, and then someone else goes and removes the cushions, even if the guy who threw it manages to remove the cushions, that's grama, that's going to be pater. When you talk about bringing in fruits to someone's chatzar, and then the animals that belong to the fellow who owns the chatzar eat the fruits and get hurt by it, that's grama. When we talk about putting poison in front of a behema, that's grama, that's pater. Right, if you talk about giving fire to a child, to Cherishot V'Katan, the Tosfos points out from the Gemara in Baba Kama, that's also grama. If a fire is coming and you take your friend's produce and you just put it in the way of the fire, so that when the fire ultimately gets here, it's going to destroy that produce, that's also grama. If you take the mechatas, the paraduma waters, and you do malacha with it, so physically it's the same water, but now it's pasul, that's grama. You've ruined it for paraduma. If you scare your friend and thereby cause him damage, right, hurt his ears or whatever, so that's going to be grama as well. So that's all cases of grama. Yet there are lots of other cases that are examples of garmi. For instance, if you show a dinar to a shulchani and it turns out that the dinar is bad, that's garmi. If you're done as hadin and incorrectly, you're a judge and you judge incorrectly, that's going to be garmi, even if you don't actually take the money from one party and give it to another party. If you have shtaros, someone, your friend has shtaros, let's say that people owe money. Now the shtaros themselves don't have any inherent value, it's just that they say that people owe money, and you burn those shtaros, that's garmi. If, let's say, you sell a shtarchov that says someone owes you money, you sell it to your friend, and then you go and you're mochalit, the act of being mochalit is garmi. So where exactly do we draw the line between grama and garmi? These all seem like somewhat indirect actions that are clearly going to cause damage. So how do we define the difference between grama and garmi? So says Tosfos on the first very wide line on the bottom of Chaf Beis Amud Beis, one possibility, says V'chilik Rabbeinu Yitzchak, he says V'chilik Rabbeinu Yitzchak, Lashonecha de dina de garmi chayiv haynu sha'osa hu atzmo hezek l'mamon chavero. Garmi is more direct than grama, because garmi always means that you yourself do the damage to your friend's mamon, as opposed to grama, where you're not doing the damage yourself, you're putting the item in a position where the damage is going to be done. So for instance, I put the poison in front of the animal, but the animal then does the damage himself by going ahead and eating the poison, as opposed to garmi, which is when I burn my friend's shtaros. So I myself am directly I'm indirectly, but I myself am damaging, doing the damage myself. I'm doing the action of damage myself. So that's one possibility. Va'od chilek, another possibility. Dina degarmi dechayiv hainu mishas maisa shaba hezek. You're chayiv and dina degarmi when the hezek comes right away at the shas maisa. When I go and I burn the shtaros, so right then there's a hezek, because right then he loses the ability to collect. However, when it comes to, let's say, putting the poison in front of the animal, the hezek doesn't come until the animal goes ahead and eats that poison, which could be hours later. So it's not exactly at the shas maisa that the hezek comes. However, says Tosos, it doesn't all fit. If you go through all the examples that we gave of Brahma and all the examples we gave of Garmi, these answers don't work perfectly. In all these cases, in all these explanations of the difference between Grama and Garmi, we're going to have a difficult time explaining why, when you paskin that something is tahar when it was really tamei, and then the person you paskin for mixes it with all of the rest of his peros, why should you be chayiv? According to all the definitions we just gave, that you're only chayiv in cases where either you directly do the damage or the damage is immediate. Well, this is neither direct nor immediate. So why should you be chayiv? Why should that be considered a case of garmi? So rather, Tosfos says a third approach, which is the easiest one to accept, and that is from the third to last line on the page. He says, "V'nira l'ritzba de'dina de'garmi havi mitam knas." That garmi always works as a knas. It's a penalty for doing something wrong that could be damaging. K'demuchu b'Yerushalmi u'lekach, and therefore kol hezek hamatzli v'ragil lavo. Anytime there's a hezek that's common and it's likely to happen, that's where the chacham made a knas on such a hezek. And the reason they made such a knas is that people shouldn't go ahead and be mazik each other and say, you know what, I'm going to get off the hook anyway, I'm not going to be chayiv anyway. So the chacham made a knas. Now, if it's something that a reasonable person might think of, is to be mazik his friend, because it's not so uncommon, so that's going to be garmi, and that's going to be something for which you are chayiv. Not because it's inherently more direct than grama, no, it's the same indirectness as grama, but when it's something that's likely to happen, the chachamim saw a need to make a knas to discourage you from doing it. If it's something you're unlikely to do anyway, there's no need to make a knas to discourage it. And that's the same reason that there are those who are mechayiv when you do a hezek sheinu nikar, when you damage someone in a way, in a halachic way, in a way that's unrecognizable. You ruin his produce halachically, your metameis tarosav or something, right, where it doesn't look any different. That's why would you be chayiv? Because if we say you're pater, so then it's an easy way to get back at people that you want to get back at. If you get upset at somebody, just go be metame, all of his taros, just go ruin all of his stuff in a halachic way. So that's why, that's the same svara. It's an idea of a knas to discourage people from going and damaging other people. Says Gemara's story now, last line of Chafez on Bez. Rav Yosef Havle Hanu Tali. Rav Yosef had certain little palm trees, Davu Asu Umni Vyasi Tusayu, and bloodletters used to come and sit underneath the palm trees. Who invited the bloodletters to sit underneath the palm trees? So says tells us you have to say it's Pekarka Shalahem Hayu Yoshin, that they own the ground underneath the palm trees. The palm trees themselves are Yosef owned, but it must be these bloodletters own the ground. Velo Bekarka Shal Rav Yosef. It couldn't have been that they were sitting in Rav Yosef's land. It can't be that they were trespassing, because the Gemara is going to say, it's only Grumma. The Gemara is going to say, whatever damage they're doing right now, that it's only Grumma. What do you mean? If they're trespassing, then that's a real problem. So it must be that they own the land that they're sitting on. So anyway, Rav Yosef owns these palm trees. These bloodletters apparently own the karka underneath the palm trees. And they come and they sit under the palm trees. Vasu Urvi, Achli Dama Vesalki, and these ravens come and they eat some of the blood. They're ravenous creatures. And they come and they eat some of the blood that the bloodletters are dealing with. And Vesalki Abetali Umafsdi Tamri. And they go and they mess up all the dates on the palm tree, because then they climb up to the palm tree and they get blood all over the peros of the palm tree. So it's terrible. It's ruining all of his peros. Samlu Rav Yosef said to them, Afikuli korkor mehacha, get the korkor out of here. So what's the korkor? Says Rashi, Orvim, it means ravens. How does korkor mean ravens? Shedomen b'tzaakasan kikorin korkor. Because when a raven cries out, the raven makes the sound, korkor. Right? So that's korkor. So that's how you get the name. There's a word for that in English. When we have a word that mimics a sound, I don't know what it's called, but there's a word for that in English. You don't know? Yeah, okay, at least he's not here today. Okay, so we'll ask him later. So there's a, we'll see if anyone listens online, maybe I'll get an email. So so there's he said, get the korkor out of here. Amalei Abaye v'hagramahus. Abaye says, what do you mean? Why do they have to get anything out of there? It's grama. Grama bin Zikin is pater, so they don't have to do anything. Amalei hachyam raftuvi barmasna, zosomeres grama bin Zikin aser. He says, I'm not suing them for the payrolls. If I was suing them for the payrolls, you're right, they'd be pater for whatever damage was caused. I'm trying to tell them not to do this again, to stop doing it in the future. Everyone agrees, grama bin Zikin is aser. It may be pater, but it's aser. It's pater if you do it, that you're not going to be chayv to pay, but you're certainly not allowed to do it lechatchila. That's all I'm saying. So frankly, marvaha achzit luhu, but don't they have a chazaka that they're able to do this because they've been doing it for so long and he never said anything up until now? So don't you assume it's a chazaka that they've already established? Says Tosfos, and we saw this Tosfos earlier in the Masechta. We turned to it because it was relevant to Davav. Says Tosfos, pirish rivam kivan shaloba lahachzik bekarka shal chaver v'lomar shalohu. They're not claiming that they own the trees. They're just claiming that they have the right to use the area of the trees because they own the land, and no one ever said anything about the area of the trees. So they're just claiming that they have the right to use that area in a way that the trees are going to be affected. That's why they don't need a taina. Meaning, if they're claiming that they bought the trees and that they own the trees, then they need a taina that they bought the trees. If they're claiming that that it belongs to them, they need a taina. They need to be able to say, well, he sold it to us, he gave it to us as matana. You can't say it belongs to me because no one ever said anything. I can't go into someone's house and say, this house belongs to me. Why? Because I walked in and no one said anything to the contrary. No, then I need a taina. I need to say you sold it to me. I need to say you gave it to me as a matana. But over here, by cheskas tashmishin, there's the chiddush of the Rivam. By cheskas tashmishin, you don't need a taina. The very fact that he's allowed you to walk through his backyard for all those years, that's enough. You don't have to say, I assume that you don't have to say, he sold it to me, he gave me permission. You have the right to say, I assume he was mochel because he never said anything. That's all you need. Because mistam over here, they weren't claiming that Rav Yosef sold them the right to deal with blood underneath the trees. It's like we said earlier in the Gemara, about all sorts of cheskas tashmishin, that if you have a chazaka that you're allowed to have your gutters pour out into your friend's yard, you don't, as long as you have 3 years, you don't need a taina that he sold you the right to do it, or he gave you the right to do it. Just the fact that he didn't say anything is enough. So you see, the shitas harivam is that for cheskas tashmishin you need gimel shanim, but you don't need a taina. If you recall, Rashi on Daf Vav Amud Aleph said differently. Rashi on Daf Vav Amud Aleph has said that all these chazakos, kol chazakos halol d'shmaitin, all these cheskos tashmitin, tashmishin, einon chazakos shalosh shanim. These are not 3 year chazakos. To lo shayich shalosh shanim al gabei cheskos karka shemachsum k'stei chavero. Chazakos shalosh shanim is for the third parak. That's when you're claiming that you own a piece of property. But by cheskos tashmishin bi alma, where you use someone else's property, if you do it for a moment, that's a chazaka. All you need to do it is for a single moment. You don't need 3 years. So that's against this shita and Tosus. Says Tosus Vaiter, Ve'inira. I don't like the Rivam Tos says, Dimlo Hiklilo, ki hechzik lahordi, amai hechzik lukshuri. If he's never coming with a taina, then when he is machzik for one tashmish, why should it count for another tashmish as well? El al krocha chasam shatoin shehiknelo lahachi achzik l'shuri de'ein adam osa kinyan l'mechza. It must be that in by cheskas tashmishin you have to have a taina. Tosa says in the end, it can't be that it works without a taina. Either way, whatever is going on in our Gemara, whether they're tainying the Rav Yosef sold them or not, bottom line is the Gemara says whatever is required for cheskas tashmishin, don't they have it over here? Don't these blood letters have a cheskas tashmishin? Says Gemara, Amrav Nachman, Amrav Barvua, ain chazak l'nizakin. No, you can't have a chazaka to damage somebody. A chazaka to use his property, fine. But a chazaka to damage his property, there's no such thing as such a chazaka. Why? Because, says Rabbi Natan, quoted in Tosos, because even if he was makna to you the right to do something there and the right to damage him, It's a kinyan betalus because he assumed he'd be able to withstand it. He thought the damage wouldn't bother him that much, that it wasn't going to be anything major. But he has the right to say later, you know what, I never realized it would be this bad, and I can't be mekabel it. I can't deal with it anymore that you're constantly damaging. So any kinyan that was done to allow someone to damage somebody else is automatically invalidated. It's a kinyan betalus. But says Tosos, that's what Rabbeinu Tam holds, ve'ein nireh. To be dekamer ein chazak nizak nikolameda karaya yesh. He says, no. When we say ein chazaka l'nizaka, we mean you can't have a chazaka, but if you have a raya that you've acquired the right to damage, then that does count. So if you have actually made a real kinyan on the right to damage, that would be fine. Over here we're dealing with where he didn't make a kinyan. He's saying, I was just allowed to do it because you didn't say anything. That you can't have. You can't have a chazaka in that level for nizakin. So says the Gemara, v'lavid maralar of Mariam or Bukutra of Ziron Besakise, but wait a second, didn't we qualify that idea that any chazaka in nizakin? That is dafka by very severe kinds of nizikin, that a person cannot develop a chazaka, like smoke damage, or the damage of having a beis hakisei right there, where the smell is so pungent, it's so difficult to deal with. That's where we say, ein chazaka l'nezikin. So Rav Yosef responded, look, hani l'didi, danin l'daitai, ki kutra beis hakisei damali. Why is kutra and beis hakisei something that we're going to say there's no chazaka? Because the damage is so overwhelming and it's so difficult to handle. He says, well, guess what? I'm an istinus. For me, a lot of things are very difficult to handle. So for me, any sort of damage, especially blood on my fruits, I just can't handle such a thing. For me, that's as bad as beis hakisei is for other people, because I'm an istinus. Tosfos points out that we do find that Rav Yosef was an istinus. The Gemara Maseches Arvei Pesachim tells us that shlosha chayeyam einam chayim, that there are three people whose lives are ki'ilu not worth living because their lives are so difficult, they're always getting annoyed. And they are harachmanim, varatchanim, v'anini adas. People who have tremendous rachmanus. Why are their lives not? Because there's so much rachmanus to have on people because there's so many tzaros. So you look around at the world's tzaros. If you're a real rachaman, so you can't function. Because there's so many tzaras, how do you cope? How do you deal? If you really internalize everybody else's tzaras, it's very, very difficult to deal with it and to not get depressed. Ratchanim, people who easily get angry, so their lives also, it's crazy. They get angry at everything, and they can't keep a calm demeanor about anything. So they're always all worked up. It's not good. It's not good. It's not healthy. And the third is anine adas, people who are very, very sensitive. People who are, obsessive compulsive or whatever. People who, are always, washing their hands every 2 seconds and worried about everything. So it's very difficult because there's always things that are annoying them and that are bothering them. And Rav Yosef says, "V'kulu isnubi." I'm all of those things. So my life must be the most miserable because I'm easily angered. I'm a big rachaman, and I'm also anine adas. So you see that Rav Yosef was an istinus. So that from that Gemara, you see, he was an istinus, so it was a reasonable taina. He wasn't just making it up over here. It was something that literally everything was like beis hakisei to him. Now, Tosfos points out, now when we talk about smoke, it's not any smoke, meaning if the person beneath you lights a candle once in a while, that's not called the damage of kutra, the damage of smoke. We're talking about smoke from a furnace, from a large furnace that really does a lot of smoke damage. That's where we say that smoke damage is going to be a problem. And the same with beis hakisei. He says beis hakisei is dafka their kinds of beis hakisei, which were lemala min hakarka. It was like a porta potty, but it was disgusting. The smell was just putrid. But if you have a beis hakisei where it's lemata min hakarka, where they have some sort of plumbing system, some sort of primitive plumbing system that they had, where whatever goes into the beis hakisei sort of falls down somewhere, so then that's not as putrid, that's not as difficult. It's covered up a little bit. That's not as difficult to be able to withstand. That's a big discussion in terms of our modern day beis hakisei, whether it actually has the full din of a beis hakisei legabe making brachos and netilas yadayim. Like, can you wash in a beis hakisei from netilas yadayim? So in the Gemara's beis hakisei, you're certainly not allowed to wash. So it's a big discussion about how to compare Rav Avadia as a tshuva, about whether you can compare our beis hakisei to theirs. Even the ones that they had, that Tosfos is referring to, that covered up whatever they had. So on the one hand, it was still on premises, it was just covered, whereas by ours, it leaves entirely. On the other hand, by theirs, it never sat there. It was built in a way that it was on a slant and that it just went straight down. So it never really sat in that spot. Whereas by ours, it sits there. So okay, there's a way to tumult both ways. One would imagine that ours are much more clean and less smelly than the Beis HaKisei's in their time. But nevertheless, la halach, I think Rav Vadia says that a person should not wash until Sidayim in a Beis HaKisei. Okay, says the Gemara Vayit, Mishnah. If you have a dovecote, birds, you have to keep it 50 amos away from the city. Because otherwise your birds are going to fly right into the city and eat from people's produce in the city. And if you want to put a shovach in your own property, yeah, you live in the city and you want to put a shovach in your own property, you want to make sure that you have to make sure that there are 50 amos in each direction from the shovach that's still your property. You have to have a big ranch where you have a big piece of property where you have 50 amos in every direction, because the first 50 amos, the birds are going to be eating. And you want them to eat from your stuff. You don't want them going and ganving and stealing from other people. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Beisar Ba'as Kurin, Melo Shagar Ayonah. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you need to have 4 kurin of space, because 4 kurin is how far the bird can fly all at one shot. So what? It's Machlokas and Metzias. Tanakama holds that they can only fly 50 amos at one shot. And Rabbi Yehuda says they can fly 4 kurs. So it says Tosos, no, it's not at all Machlokas and Metzias. Rabbi Yehuda Rabbanon lo pligi b'shegar ayona kamahavi. They're not arguing how far a bird can fly. The Moda Rabbanon, the base of our kurin, havi shegar ayona. The Rabbanon and Moda, that 4 kurs, how far it can fly. El Rabbanon Savri Kivan de Bechamish Mama Malia Kreisayu, because I'm reading the Gemara, Sulam Askit Fe. It's just that the Rabbanon are going to hold that yes, it can fly 4 kurin at one shot, but usually it's already full in the first 50 amos. It fills its stomach, and the first 50 amos finds enough food there. And therefore, you don't have to worry about more than that. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda is going to say that no, it's, as long as it's able to fly in the first shot, it's still going to stop at any point during that original flight, in order to fill its stomach, in order to eat something. But if you purchase the property with a shovach in it, and it doesn't have this arba'as kurin in all directions, even if it only has a base rova, it doesn't have that much space between the shovach and the property line, you're allowed to keep it. You don't have to say, oh, this must have been illegally built. You have the right to assume that it was legally built and some deal was worked out where that shovach was legal, where it was allowed to be in your property, not so far away from the property line if you bought it. Says the Gemara, Chamish Mam V'sulo, just 50 amos, that's all you need to worry about. Uraminhi, Ein Parson Nishvan Leonim Elim, Kena Yerochuk Min Yishuv Shloshim Ris. You're not allowed to put out bird traps unless you're 30 ris away from the Yishuv, so that you don't steal other people's birds, because you don't want birds that are privately owned going into your traps, right? So don't you see that birds travel 30 ris, not Chamish Mamah? No, of course they fly much further than Chamish Mama. It's just that their stomachs are filled within Chamish Mama. So in our Mishnah, where we're talking about your birds that you're worried about eating other people's stuff, so you only have to worry about the first Chamish Mama because that's when they're eating. But in this Braisa that we're talking about, setting up traps where you're worried about stealing other people's birds, you don't need them to be eating to steal them. You'd be stealing them as long as they're present, as long as they're there. And they're going to fly shloshim ris. So it says Gemara, meishat shloshim ris v'sulo. But even shloshim ris, that's all they fly. They don't go further than that. V'atanya b'yishuv afilu me'el mi'elo yifros. Don't we have a braisa that says if you're in a yishuv, then even 100 mil away from your friend's shovach, you're not allowed to be poris traps. You're not allowed to set up traps. So you see that his birds are going to fly 100 mil, which is a lot more than shloshim ris. Says Gemara, Rav Yosef Amar b'yishuv kramim. Now Rav Yosef explains when we say that you're not allowed to set up even 100 mil away in the yishuv, it means that there are a lot of vineyards there, so the birds have a lot of places to rest along the way, and in that situation they're going to fly a lot further. Rav Amar b'yishuv shovchin. Rav says that no, we're dealing with a case where there are a lot of other nests in between the original nest and where you're setting up the traps. And that's why you need to be 100 ris away from the original nest, because there are other nests where the bird can rest and stay on the way, and that way it's able to travel much further. So, Frakting Mar, but wait a second. If there are other nests, don't you have to be marked anyway? Because you have to stay away from those other nests. Meaning, when you're setting up your trap, you don't want to trap birds from those other nests. So, forget about this nest that's far away, that's 100 mil away, that you don't want to steal birds from. If there are other nests in between, you have to be marked anyway from those nests. So, the Gemara gives three answers to that. Ibai Seimadidei, maybe those other nests belong to you. but still you have to be concerned that a bird from very far away is going to rest in your nests and ultimately go into your trap. Or maybe those other nests belong to non-Jews and therefore you don't have to worry about it. Or it could be that they belong to Hefker and you don't have to worry about it. Those nests are completely Hefker and therefore there's no problem of getting the birds from those nests. Rabbi Yehuda says that you need to be marchik four kur in any direction from your property line, because that's how far a bird flies. But the key over here is on the v'chulei, because then the Mishnah had said, but if you purchased the property that already has the shovach in it, even if it doesn't live up to, it doesn't meet the standards, the zoning standards of how far your shovach is supposed to be from the property line, you're still allowed to keep it there, because you have the right to assume that everything was done bekashrus, even though you have no idea how. You have no idea what exactly happened. You have the right to assume everything was done properly. This is what we say, that we make a taina on behalf of a lokech and a taina on behalf of a yoresh. Meaning, if I walk into a situation where I wasn't the one to make the original arrangements, so there's no way I could really know how the original arrangements were made. So we're going to make a taina for me that the original arrangements were made in a way that's agreeable, because there's no way that I could have known on my own how the arrangements were made. So yoresh tanina says it, because that's what's happening in our Mishnah. I bought this property with a shovach in it. Now, I don't know how that shovach got there so close to the property line. But there's a taina out there. I could say I purchased the rights, you were mochel, or the neighbor was mochel, whatever. There's something out there. I can't make the taina myself because I don't know. So Beis Din makes the taina on behalf of the lokeach. So says Gemara, Tanin liyoresh, Yoresh Tanina, we already learned that we make a taina on behalf of the Yoresh. Habamish from Yerusha no tzarech taina, because we said if someone comes with a Yerusha, he doesn't need to make a taina, we'll make it for him. So it says, Lokech is Shrikhle, Enochinami. The whole Chiddush of here is that we make a taina on behalf of a Lokech. Lokech Nami Tanina, we already learned Taran in Lokech as well. Laka Chatzar Bazizin Vigazuz Traos, Hareze Bechazkasa. If you buy a Chatzar and there are awnings and things that are protruding from your wall, so you have a chazaka that those are allowed to be there, even though they seem to be sticking out into the Rishus HaRabim. Why do you have a chazaka that they're allowed to be there? Because we make a taina on behalf of the lokech that he must have had some sort of agreement where this was mutter to do. Either he owned the area that they're protruding out into, and he just built his walls a little bit in his own property, and therefore he owns the area, and there's no problem with it, or that he purchased the rights, something. There's got to be something. But we don't know, the lokeach doesn't know exactly what. Beis Din will therefore make the taina on his behalf. So why do I need to be told over here as well, in the case of the nest, buying a property that has a nest that's too close to the property line, that we're torn in the lokeach, we already learned, legabe zizin ugezustraos, regarding protrusions that stick out into Rosh Hashanah, that were also toy and lokeach. So says Gemara Tzricha, we need both cases. If it only would have told me that we make a taina on behalf of lokeach by Rosh Hashanah, where it's protruding out into Rosh Hashanah, because you could always make the argument that maybe he was konis tok shalom, maybe like we said, he owned that area where the things are sticking out into, and he just built his house a little bit in on the property, and therefore he's allowed to have things sticking out into the area that he owns. Inami achul yachul b'nei Rosh Hashanah gabei, or maybe the b'nei Rosh Hashanah were mochel him. How could b'nei Rosh Hashanah be mochel? Who does he ask? He asks the millions of people that make up the Rosh Hashanah. So says Tosfos, no, it's the Zion Tuve Yair, that there's a city council that has the right to be mochel on behalf of the Rosh Hashanah. So maybe that's what happened. Aval hachalo, but over here, who says that there's any right for it to be here, for this nest to be here? V'yeshmin hacha, dekiven diyachru, eme piusei paisi, inam echul yachal gabei. And if we only would have been told, tonen lokeach over here, I would say, yes, that's because you're damaging an individual, and by an individual, it could be that you worked out an arrangement with him, and that you paid him off, or that he was mochel to you. Aval rab, man pigius, man shavik, eme lo, but by Rosh Hashanah, who are you going to pay off exactly? Who are you going to purchase the rights to leave your beams over here from? It belongs to everybody. It belongs to the whole rabbim. So I would think that it does not work. Tzricha, that's why I need to be told that we are torn in the lokef in both cases, even in the case of Rishus Rabim. Hareu b'cheskaso, says the Gemara, v'amrav nachum v'amrav bovua, in chazak l'nizakin. How can you say you have a chazaka to have your nest so close to the property line? Don't we generally assume there is no chazaka for damage? So that's what we're saying. No, when do we say in chazak l'nizakin? Only by very severe types of damage that are very difficult to put up with, like smoke damage and beis hakise damage. But regular damage is chazak l'nizakin. Okay, says the Mishnah. If you find a gozel, a bird, within 50 amos of a nest, you have the right to assume that that bird came from that nest, that baby bird came from that nest. But if you find it more than 50 amos away from the nest, then finders keepers, whoever found it, gets to keep it. Let's say you find it in between two nests. So whichever nest it was closer to gets to keep that bird. Mechtzal, mechtzal, let's say it wasn't closer to either one, it was exactly in the middle between the two of them. Shneyem yachloku. Then they have to divide the value of the bird, because we don't know who it belongs to. It's momen amutul b'safek, and we're assuming like the sheet of Sumchus, momen amutul b'safek, cholkin, that you divide the value of the bird. Says the Gemara, Am Rabbi Chanina, rov v'karov, holchinach harov. In general, when we have, there are two ways of being mevarer, what the halacha should be in dinim amanus, or in dinim in general, not just dinim amanus. One is rov, that you follow majority, and the other is karov, if you want to figure out where something came from. So generally, if you look at what's closest, that's normally a good sign, right? If you were to find something, a yarmulke outside on the floor of the walkway to our shul, so it's likely that it came from someone in our shul, not from someone that that goes to our Torah, because it's karov, right? It's just closer. So karov is a determining factor. So anyway, but rov is also a determining factor. Let's say they had 10,000 people and we had only 10 people. So then the rov also might tell you that it came from them and it didn't come from us. So rov and karov are two competing factors. When the two are against each other, we're holichachar rov. We follow rov rather than karov. Even though both the concept of rov and the concept of karov are dinim daraisa, afilu hachi ruba adif. Still, even though they're both determining factors on a daraisa level, the rov determining factor is a better determining factor. It always wins. Masav Rabbi Zera, so asks Rabbi Zera, really? But look at where karov comes up in the Torah, and see, isn't it going up against the rov? And we still say the karov wins. What's the example in the Torah of karov determining something, telling us what happened? Where you have ayayir akrov elechalal. The case is where you find a dead body and you're not sure which city it came from, right? So this is the parsha of Egla Rufa, where the Beis Din of the closest city has to come and do the procedure of Egla Rufa. So how do you determine which city's Beis Din comes and does the procedure? The city that's closest to the dead body. Even though it may not be the largest city in the world, there may be another city that the guy had come from that's a larger city, that has more people, and that has a rov, and nevertheless, you go with the karov. So don't you see that karov beats at rov? And says Gemara, bidaleka. No, there's no other city anywhere nearby that has more people. In fact, Gemara, what do you mean? V'lezel basaru b'dialma. The rest of the world has more people than this one city. So the fact that there's a rov out there in the world versus this karov, that it came from this city, right, that's the closest city, so shouldn't the rov win? So answers Gemara, b'yoshev esbein aharim. No, we're dealing with a case where the city is situated in such a way where you can't really get to it. You don't wander into the city. It's between a bunch of mountains, and no one would ever get here unless they went, unless they were coming from this city. And that's when you go basa the karov. But other than that, you would not follow the ruba di alma. So if you have two even-sized cities, both between these mountains, and the dead body is found closer to one of those cities, so you go with the karov. But there is no rov to follow. Tana, and we learned in the Mishnah Nipal, in our Mishnah Nipal, and Nimtza B'toch HaMishnah Ma'amah Reu Shal Bala Shavak V'Alvagav Dikach Rim D'Nafish Minei, that if you find a baby bird within 50 amos of a shovach, of a dovecote, then it belongs to the guy who owns that nest, even though maybe there's another nest that's even bigger, it's just not within 50 amos. So don't you see in our Mishnah that we follow the karov, we don't follow the rov, And says Gemara Bidalaka. No, who says there's another nest? Maybe we're talking about where there is no other nest. So frak the Gemara, there's no other nest. Ihachi, Ema Sefa Chutz Michamishamama, Hareo Shlomotso, Vidalaka, Vadime Hunafel. What do you mean there's no other nest? How can then the Mishnah say that if you find it more than 50 amos away from the original nest, that you get to keep it? If there was no other nest, so even if it's more than 50 amos away, it must have come from that nest. Why should you get to keep it? Right? If there's nothing else, there's nowhere else it could have come from, why should you ever get to keep it? It must have come from there. So it's 52 amos away. So what? It couldn't have come from anywhere else. So it says, how come I ask him to be medada? That we're dealing with a bird that's hopping, it's not yet flying. And when a bird hops, we assume that it only hops up to 50 amos away from its home, that it's incapable of hopping any further. And therefore, if you found it 55 amos away from that nest, you get to keep it. Because it didn't come from that nest. There's no way it hopped all the way from that nest. How did it get here? Someone must have dropped it. Someone walking by must have dropped it. And you have no way of knowing who or how. So the only thing you can do is keep it for yourself. There's no reason to have to give it back. So Bar Rabbi Yirmiyahu says, really, you can only travel 50 amos? What if you have the following situation? Raglo achas bitoch nun ama, v'raglo achas chutz mechamishim ama mahu. What if the bird, you find the bird with one straddling the 50 amma line. It has 1 foot on one side of the 50 amma line, another foot on the other side of the 50 amma line. Says the Gemara, v'aldav ku l'Rabbi Yirmi be midrasha. When Rabbi Yirmi started asking questions like that, they threw Rabbi Yirmi out of the base medrash, because you don't ask questions like that. So Tosfos says, what do you mean? What's wrong with asking questions like that? Ah, maybe it means that it's something that's so uncommon, and you don't ask questions about things that never ever happen. Says the Gemara, says Tosfos, come on, you ever learn Gemara? In Gemara, we always ask questions about things that never happen, that are very, very uncommon. So says Tosfos, no, the issue is that Rabbi Yirmi was trying to push the limits of what the Rabbanan had to say. I mean, the Rabbanan said that it travels 50 amos and not a step further. Rabbi Yirmi was saying, oh yeah, you mean to tell me only 50 and not 51? That it can't go one step further? And the halach is kol shiur chacham kenu, when they give us a shiur, that's the shiur. We don't have the right to question that shiur. And that's why he was thrown out of the Beis Medrash for questioning the wisdom of the chachamim in determining an exact and precise shiur. Okay, again, we're still in the sugya of Rav Karov, but Hashem will continue with the next raya, 5 lines from the bottom of the page, tomorrow. It's a shorter shiur tomorrow. Let's leave this.